I really hope working in a bakery never turns into a regular job full of early mornings, oven-scorched eyebrows, varicose veins, and flowery underwear. No. Bakery air is just too good for that. It can't become another day at the office. It just can't. So let's make sure we all enjoy it. Catch some of those sugary vapors next time you're running past a cinnamon bun place at the train station. Suck back a nose full of hot fumes when you walk the dog by an open bakery door on Saturday morning. And make sure when you stop to smell the roses, you stop to smell the croissants and cookies, too. Awesome.
Tripping and realizing no one saw you. Babies take a while to walk. If you've seen it happen, you know there is plenty of falling, crawling, and bawling. Hey, there's a reason most two-year-olds are covered in fat lips, skinned knees, and coffee table dented foreheads. Learning to walk ain't easy. Sure, you did it and I did it, but we probably couldn't do it again. Like learning anything tough and life-altering, learning to walk is a messy process that takes time and patience. First, there is rolling. That cute little baby powder ball of flabby arms and puffy diapers twists and shimmies on the cold linoleum with a big smile on her face. This marks a major step as baby is learning to move on her own. Don't laugh, because you were once a flabby, wiggling diaper ball too. Once that's nailed, it's time to sit up and start crawling. This turns the house into a carpeted jungle full of discovery and adventure. Curiosity helps little ones discover pantry shelves, cat litter trays, and toilets. Some people have an adorable crab baby at this stage, also known as a one-year-old who crawls backward or sideways instead of forward. Watch out for pinchy claws grabbing at your hair and glasses. Next up, teetering. White-knuckled, apricot-sized hands grip staircase railings and kitchen table legs with furrowed brows and steely determination. The side benefit of diapers comes into play here, as handy ass padding for the vast number of harrowing, thunderous falls. Eventually, with immense focus and concentration, most of them manage to find their center of gravity and balance the baby chub on their two teeny-tiny tootsies. After this point, it's just a matter of time. There's some nervous balancing without the railing, and then lopsided running with occasional face plants in the front hallway. But soon, baby nails it. And after that, she's probably flying pretty high. Unfortunately, the bad news is that practice doesn't always make perfect. Even though we've been mastering the art of standing tall for years and years and years, everyone slips and falls now and then. Just ask your local small claims court. So next time your shoe catches on the top step at work, you trip stepping off the airport's moving sidewalk, or you bail on a patch of ice outside your front door, remember that not too long ago, you couldn't walk at all. So your wipeout is really no big deal. As long as nobody saw you. Awesome.
The Universal Fry Sharing Policy. The Universal Fry Sharing Policy states that if you are eating a meal with someone who ordered fries and you didn't order fries, you're entitled to grab one of their fries as it's landing on the table as long as A, you ask first, B, you make eye contact and raise your eyebrows until they nod, or C, you just know them really well. Also, since you're getting first dibs on their sizzling stick pile of delicious, hot, oily fries, it's only fair that you purposefully avoid any obviously amazing fry in the pile. You know, that really, really long McDonald's fry sticking out of the box? Probably shouldn't touch that. But the thin, crispy short ones, the oversalted ones, and the regular limp and floppy ones? Those are all fair game, my friend. All fair game. But be careful out there. because this policy can be abused. Some people might start pecking away at the fry pile, then just start gaining momentum, unable to stop gorging themselves on your plate once they get started. They just keep testing the waters, pushing the envelope, snacking away until you move your plate out of reach or ask them politely how their food tastes. I'm serious. You need to watch out for these people because they'll dent your fry pile if you're not careful. Secondly, keep your eyes peeled for greasy diner plates that come with only a dozen or so baked potato tasting fries. You know what I'm talking about. Those piles are off limits. Sorry, but the universal fry sharing policy simply does not cover extremely small piles of chunky style fries. It would be too much to take one of those fries. The percentages just don't work. Finally, there is one appendix to the universal fry sharing policy. Conveniently, it is called Appendix 1, and it simply states that after somebody who ordered fries finishes their meal and pushes their leftover pile of dry, cold, ketchup-smeared fries into the center of the table, first dibs go to people who didn't get fries. Second dibs go to those who already demolished a stack of them but just want more. And third dibs go to the guy washing dishes in the kitchen. So thanks, Universal Fry Sharing Policy. Your existence is a win-win. Balancing the tables by helping us fry guys trim down the calories and helping the can-I-sub-salad-for-fries folks enjoy some guilty pleasure while still meeting their eatin' healthy goals. Awesome.
Sleeping in new bed sheets. You know the feeling. You just spent 5 minutes chasing all the corners of the elastic form-fitting bottom sheet around your bed and then laid and tucked the top sheet tightly into the mattress. You found some pillow covers in the linen closet, squeezed and shook your pillows in there, put your blanket over all of it, took a deep breath, and then dove right into the fresh, cold, mothball-smelling sheets. New sheets are great, because they don't smell like the sleeping you, with your armpit hair all squishing around in there all night, your drool leaking all over the pillows, and your crusty old feet flaking off into little piles of dead skin shavings at the foot of the bed. And let's not forget the hot farts you pop out when you're sleeping, too. Don't deny it. We're all disgusting when we're asleep. And new bed sheets are great for letting us temporarily escape our own filth. Really, only one thing can add to that new bedsheet feeling, and that's when it's your first seasonal sleep in thin cotton summer sheets or thick linen winter sheets. As you close your eyes softly, crickets chirping outside your window, moonlight and tree branches shadow dancing on the walls, you know right then and there, it's going to be a good night. Awesome.
Using hotel lobby bathrooms when you're out walking around. Anyone else out there have a bladder the size of a walnut? One that fills up after a few spoons of soup and is at attention, ready to drain any time of the day? If you're afraid of getting a drink before the movie or having a glass of water any time after 6 p.m., then you're with me. My small and weak-bladdered brothers and sisters of the world, unite! See, we got issues, me and you. We're terrible on airplanes. We never get to experience the 7-Eleven Super Big Gulp. And maybe worst of all, we're always forcing our friends to help us find public washrooms when we're walking or driving anywhere, which really drives them crazy. Sorry, friends. If you're with me on this one, then you know these searches for decent public washrooms really are a fine art. Those perfect places are always out there, but you really need to be careful. With that warning, let's discuss the top 5 places to pee when you're out. 5. Gas stations. Easy prey for the worst kind of fly-by urinators, those who don't live nearby or plan on coming back. These people do not respect bathroom facilities. We know this from racist scrawls on bathroom walls and the mistaking of floors for toilets. Bad ones smell rancid. Good ones
smell like a flatbed truck full of urinal pucks sitting on a garbage dump. But hey, sometimes they appear like mirages on the horizon, and at least you know they're almost always open and have a toilet. So we give you number 5, gas stations. Thanks for coming out. 4. Bus or train stations. Bus or train station bathrooms are just like gas stations, but with one major difference. Maintenance. Whereas gas stations are run by individual owner-operators or a couple of teenagers working the midnight shift, bus or train stations are generally run by formal transit authorities or governments who employ people just to clean the place up, because otherwise they'd look bad or get kicked off the Board of Transportation or something. The other plus to bus or train stations is size. They usually have rows of stalls or urinals instead of one. Very little chance of having to wait. So thanks, bus or train station bathroom. You're there when we need you. 3. Restaurants or coffee shops. Okay, we're starting to get into decent territory now. Maybe an extra ply on the toilet paper, or perhaps a comic strip pinned up over the urinal. Restaurant and coffee shop bathrooms are much better, but they are a little hard to get at. You've either got to buy something or pretend you're looking for someone before running to the back of the place and then taking off. Care and delicacy is required, not for the faint of heart. 2. Somebody's nearby house. This is where you make the mid-trip pit stop at a local friend's apartment or house. They don't necessarily have to be hanging out with you at the time. Just buzzing their place and asking if you can use the facilities is acceptable. Once you get in, you'll be living large with thick toilet paper, fancy cream soap, and occasionally a stack of dog-eared magazines. Try not to judge the hair in the sink, bath towel on the floor, or bright glowing toilet bowl ring staring up at you like the eye of Sauron. Just enjoy. And get out. 1. Hotel lobby bathrooms. Now, we finally reach the cream of the crop. The cherry on the sundae. The top of the roller coaster. Yes, the spacious, luxurious, over-the-top hotel lobby bathrooms really are magical when you've been walking around all day, sweating under the blazing sun, just searching for somewhere to lighten your load. Hotel bathrooms are great because they are so sinful. Really, nothing in there is necessary, but you become the emperor of toilets, commander over a vast plumbing kingdom, ruler of all faucets and mirrors for miles around. Hotel lobby bathrooms treat us streetwalkers like uppity business class travelers. I mean, who likes to dry their hands with face cloths anyway? Who needs chairs in the bathroom? And who really wants one of those bathroom butlers sneakily wedged into a corner, wearing a tux, and holding out cologne and towels for you? Who needs this? Well, us, that's who. We thimble-bladdered folk need this once in a while. I'm sorry, but we need it. A little pampering and comforting for our terrible genetic sins. So thank you, hotel lobby bathrooms, for treating us with grace and dignity amongst a world of people who don't like to hang out with us. Awesome.
Taking your bra off after wearing it for hours.
It just feels like freedom.
Or so I've heard. Awesome.
The sound of scissors cutting construction paper. When you hear scissors cutting through a sheet of construction paper, you just know fun is about to happen. The table is covered with glue sticks, glitter, pipe cleaners, and googly eyes, and everything is set for a day full of crafts with the camp counselor. In some ways, this is essentially the kid equivalent of spreading tools out across the basement workbench before building a shelf or taping windows and opening paint cans before you coat the kitchen walls in a new shade. Yes, the sound of scissors cutting construction paper is the sound of important work about to happen. It's the sound of creativity bubbling. It's the sound of ideas blossoming. And it's the sound of some decent fun on a rainy afternoon. Awesome.
Waking up before your alarm clock and realizing you've got lots of sleep time left. Dark windows. Dead silence. Dim moonlight dancing on the walls. The night is calm and quiet and peaceful. And then, boom! Your eyes burst open and you bust out of bed in an adrenaline-gushing, brain-rushing state of emergency. Dizzy and blind, you urgently stumble over to the clock as thoughts zoom through your head. Am I late for work? Did I miss the buzzer? Do I have time for a shower? You swipe the clock, zoom it up to your squinty eyeballs, and get a good look. 4:56 a.m., it screams in its trademark bright red fluorescent silence. 4:56 a.m. Your hazy half-asleep brain slowly clicks into gear. Much early than morning, you piece together slowly. Time more sleep now. And then a slow, thin smile curls on your lips as you turn to stare at your crumpled cocoon and dive back into bedhead paradise. Oh, you know that second dip into dreamland will be a doozy for a few big reasons. Ready to rock. The bed is pre-warmed, the mattress pre-dented, and the other side of the pillow is just waiting to hug your hot, salty head. Detangle the sheets and you're good to go. Dare to dream. If that rocking dream you're having is still fresh in your head, you might be able to clench your eyes, squeeze your brain, and pop right back into it. Take a break. Your body woke up early because it felt pretty rested, so the extra sleep is just its way of saying, go ahead, take a long lunch. People, this is like a snow day without the shoveling. Just a big puddle of free time to soak up guilt-free. Yes, waking up before your alarm clock and realizing you've got lots of sleep time left is a great thing. Sure, your heart pulses and your brain convulses, but you quickly realize there's a long time to go before morning. So snore on and snooze strong, my friends. Awesome!
When the socks from the dryer all match up perfectly. Peeling apart that static-covered clump of socks is tense. First, you yank them from the dryer and dump the hot haystack on the bed. Then you start pairing up the easy ones, reconnecting brown argyle husbands with brown argyle wives and red-striped brothers with red-striped sisters. It's free and easy love all around. But then it happens. You hit that big pile of white or black leftover socks, and matching gets tough. You're inspecting patterns and heel placements, checking textures and fades, all the while hoping, just hoping, that everything will work out fine. As you approach the last few socks, you do a quick mental count to see if you've got an even number of socks left on the bedspread. If you do, and if they all match up perfectly, then you're loving it. There are no missing tube socks or disappearing dress socks. Everything is locked and loaded, so you just put them all together, take that basket of well-worn lovers to the dresser, and dump them all in the drawer with a big smile on your face. Awesome.
When there's still time left in the parking meter when you pull up. Say some kind and generous soul left 7 unused minutes on the parking meter and left you with 3 big choices. First of all, you could go with the no-dollar dash. This is where you do some quick mental math and figure you can run all your errands before the time expires. If you can grab a slice of pizza and pick up the dry cleaning that quickly, then go, man. Just go. Then again, maybe no-dollar dashing is too stressful for you. You're afraid of the parking ticket. So you go instead with the tight quarter squeeze. Here's where you plug a warm quarter in there because you're sure 17 minutes will be good enough. Hey, you're still thankful for the 7 free minutes, but figure it's worth buying yourself a brisk walk in place of a run. Lastly, you could go slot machine. You're one of those folks who just don't trust themselves. The parking ticket must be avoided at all costs, even if it means dumping an extra couple dollars in the meter. You buy yourself a big, warm security blanket in case you get held up somewhere. And now, even though most of us would like to think of ourselves as laid-back, no-dollar-dash kind of folks, let's be honest. We love the slot machines, because they're the ones who leave us with 7 minutes left the next time. And if it wasn't for the tight quarter squeezers and their perfect parking planning, getting 7 minutes of free time would just become no big deal. So by holding hands and joining together, we all make that world go right on round. Awesome.
The smell of crayons. Crack open a fresh box and get ready for a neuron-splattering head rush. Awesome!
Peeling an orange in one shot. It ain't easy, but when you finally succeed in peeling an orange into only one big swirly peel, it can be one of the greatest fruit-eating experiences of your life. Here's how to make the magic happen. 1. Pick a winner. No two oranges are created equal, so it's important to inspect your fruit before you pick it. Smart money says grab a juicy one that's been ripe for a day or two and has plenty of loose, saggy peel hanging around, just begging for a big thumb puncture right in the gut. If you have trouble, just remember this handy line. To get that peel off, pick one that's soft. Word to your sister. 2. Roll it out. Optional. Some people like to roll their orange around on the counter a bit just to make doubly sure that the peel is primed and ready to go. This is the equivalent of sending the orange out to the bullpen to warm up. A side benefit is that your orange becomes extra juicy. 3. The thumb puncture. This is the most critical move, so let's break it down. First, make sure you do actually use your thumb to perform the puncture, not the questionable four-finger scratching the blackboard technique. People who go the four-finger route are doomed to get peel scraps flying everywhere, so don't do it. Now, when you have your game face ready, aim for one of the flabby peel rolls right near the top or bottom of the orange. No matter what, do not stab right in the middle of the fruit, because that's the thinnest part of the peel, and you'll walk away a humiliated pulpy mess. 4. Long, slow burn. Once you're in, it's time to slowly, majestically, carve out a big peel strip around and around and around the orange. Be careful not to create any peel islands, those little chunks of peel just hanging out in the middle of a freshly peeled area. Also, don't peel too thick a strip, inaccurate and unpredictable. And don't peel too thin a strip, could snap off. Just relax, and it will come with practice. If you seem to be losing your momentum or getting stressed out, put the orange down, shake your hands out, take some deep breaths, and regroup. 5. Show and tell. Did you nail it? Did you finish it off good? If so, congratulations. You're now holding a freshly shorn orange in one hand and a limp and long snake-like strip of peel in the other. You have to finish by showing this to at least one person and saying, hey, check it out. Maybe hang it right in front of their face if they don't seem impressed at first. They should come around and at least flash you a terse thumbs up or a sarcastic eyebrow raise. Yes, peeling an orange in one shot is a terrific accomplishment. It's one of the best fruit openings out there, easily trumping the watermelon split, pineapple top lop, or coconut crack. Awesome.
Using all the different shampoos and soaps in someone else's shower. Shampoo doesn't travel well. First of all, you can barely get it on the plane. Nope. no liquids in your carry-on. So unless you've got a little travel bottle or you're checking in a big suitcase, you can't really take it. And even if you do check it in, you've got the packing problem. I know my terrible method of putting a big bottle of shampoo in a couple plastic bags isn't the answer. But what is? Travel bottles are more trouble than they're worth. You have to play sloppy scientist to refill them, and they're small and easy to forget everywhere. No, shampoo just doesn't travel well. Like fireworks, katana blades, or colicky babies, it just wasn't meant to fly. So if you're like me, you just don't pack it. You swallow hard, zip that suitcase, and trust that your hair will make it home. When you hit the road without shampoo, a few things could happen. One, you might have to slum it, oily style. Just work that comb and pray for no dandruff. Two, you might have to use one of the little hotel bottles of shampoo or tear into one of their tiny little shampoo samples with your teeth in the shower. If you're like me, you'll probably use the lotion in your hair too, thinking it's conditioner. Three, best case scenario, you're crashing with friends and you get to take a shower in their shower and go wild using all the different shampoos and soaps they've got in there. Now, we all know the last option is clearly the best. However, it only works if you actually are staying with friends and if you shower in their real shower. Not their guest shower, not their basement shower, but their actual shower. The one they use every day. That's where you peel back their crinkly, mildewed curtain and open up a fantasy world of half-used bizarro products filling all corners of the bathtub, piled high in bright pinks and neon greens like a candy store. So go ahead, lock that door, strip right down, and get right in there. Just make sure you follow the top four showering in other people's shower rules. One, bar ban. The bar of soap is completely off limits. No questions asked. You don't know where it's been. They don't know where you're putting it, so you just have to stay away. The last thing anyone wants for a thank you gift is a nest of wet hairs in the soap dish. Two, watch the clock. Definitely enjoy the moment, but don't take too long. You don't know their hot water situation or if they need the bathroom, so get out before you get the place too steamy. And leave the fan on. Three, sampling is encouraged. If you're staying with a couple, chances are good they've got his and hers sections. Try both. What's this? New scent of body wash? Squirt. Weird kiwi grapefruit face wash? Squirt. $40 a bottle salon conditioner that looks like it came from a science lab? Squirt, squirt, squirt! Four, don't finish anything. Squirt away, but don't drain anything. They might be counting on one last use of their favorite conditioner, and you don't want to rob them of that. So, that's it. That's the perfect traveling shampoo situation, and them's the rules for living by it. Now, is it just me, or does using all the different shampoos and soaps in someone else's shower make you feel like you're in some kind of focus group? You can just see the end of it, too. A few folks in white smocks hold clipboards waiting for you outside the bathroom door in the dark hallway. It flies open and steam shoots out in all directions. You emerge in a towel, your skin damp, your feet wet, and quickly there are questions. What did you think of the blue bottle? Did it give you the lather you were looking for? What about the scent? They keep going, writing furiously as you spit out your first impressions. Then they ask the big one. What was the shower experience like overall? They wait expectantly, heads bowed, pencils hovering just above the sheet, eyes peering up at you over their glasses. And you smile, and you nod, and you know what to tell them. Awesome.
When the vending machine gives you two things instead of one. First, you spot the teetering treat. It's the candy bar, hanging onto the metal spirals for dear life, just sitting there after giving the last customer the old for sale fail and teasing him instead of delivering the goods. And instead of spending another dollar to test his luck, he decided to walk away. Hey, we've all been there too. So now it's time for some good old-fashioned vending machine karma, also known as chocolate justice. So just drop your money in, push the buttons, and listen for that sweet thump-thump of two treats dropping into the sugar basin at once. Now push back the awkwardly heavy door and swipe a paw in there to scoop up your treasures. Kiss the vending machine plastic window. Hold your nougat-filled plunder up to the sky, and then flee the scene. It's snacking time. Yes, that free treat is great because now's your chance to play Santa on an unsuspecting coworker or classmate. Got someone who could use a caramel fix? Of course you do. So share the wealth and give yourself a break together. It's Christmas again. Also, no matter how much you try, you can't return the free snack. No, there's no wedging your hand up there and throwing it back into its metal spiral jail cell. So ditch the guilt and smile back at the gods of snacking, for they have smiled down upon you. And let me tell you something else. You deserve it. Awesome.
Licking the batter off the beaters of a cake mixer. You can't do it without getting batter all over your face, because there's that hard-to-reach place in the middle of the beater. Your tongue isn't gonna reach, and leaving it unlicked isn't an option. So get in there, get sticky, and get awesome.
Being the first person into a really crowded movie theater and getting the prime seats. When it comes to movie theater seats, everybody has their favorite. First up, there's the back row crowd. We all know these people, because most of us have been these people. With nobody behind you, the back row becomes a prime makeout spot, a perfect place to sneak sips from your secret flask, or just somewhere to place your really, really tall and lanky body without blocking anyone's view. Thanks for that, by the way. Next, you've got your middle of the packers. These folks go for some of the most popular seats, the middle seats in the middle row about midway back. They might go on about how the sound is better from straight ahead or how they get a headache from sitting too close, but I think they just like being in the thick of things. And who can blame them? Side guys, that's who. Yes, the folks who enjoy sitting in the thin side sections of the movie theater are a rare breed, but they're out there. Maybe they have pea-sized bladders or fidgety children in tow and need access to a quick getaway lane. Or perhaps they want some thinking space and don't like fighting for armrests. Whatever their reasons, I think I can safely say that most of us are glad they exist, because they really help our odds at getting the other seats. And we can't forget the lazy boys and girls. These are the folks who put their feet up on the seat in front of them. "I came here to relax," they seem to say to themselves. "So I'm going to relax." They have no problem taking up a seat in front of them with their dirty sneakers or corn-covered heels. Brave souls may even try to pull off the extreme lazy move, which involves very slowly and softly putting their feet on the chair in front of them despite someone already sitting in it. It does not involve making new friends generally. But these folks like their feet up, so they'll even take a corner seat that nobody wants to pull it off. Lastly, there are the front row crazies. You know, I used to think people who sat in the front section just had incredibly poor judgment and incredibly good chiropractor coverage. Hey-yo! But seriously, craning their necks sky high, rolling their heads left to right the whole time, what were they thinking? But then I realized that some of these people are just my friend Mike, who always realizes at the last minute that he forgot his glasses and forces us to sit near the front so he can see the screen. So sure, everybody has their favorite seat. The problem is that we don't always get them. Some people buy tickets online and line up really early, so when we get to the theater, they're already there, waiting near the garbage can, smacking their gum, reading their free movie magazine. No, we're not going to beat those folks unless we want to play their game. And their game is generally pretty long and tedious. Other times, people seem to know a back route or something. You think you're going to get a good seat, but suddenly, there are two ladies sitting there out of nowhere, stretching out their sweaters and purses across a long row to save room for all their friends. They're like nervous hens, eyeing you suspiciously, like you might grab an egg and take off. They get right into it, too. I've seen a stretchy wool sweater cover four seats. That's some serious wingspan. Basically, it's pretty tough to get perfect seats these days. The crowds are big, the crowds are feisty, and the prime plushes ain't easy to come by. But isn't that what makes it so special when you really nail it? When you skip up those stairs, eye your prize, toss your windbreaker in front of you, and grab your perfect little bank of seats before the big show? I hope you'll agree that getting those perfect movie seats is like melted joy and sizzling happiness served on the big pizza pie of heaven. Because you won this game, my friend. You came, you sat, and you won. Awesome.
Waiters and waitresses who bring free refills without asking. On the whole, we're pretty nasty to waiters and waitresses. We complain they're wasting our time if the food takes too long to come. We complain they're trying to rush us out if the food comes too early. We warn about allergies, make special requests, ask for more bread, and talk openly about their tip while they're bussing tables next to us. We're kings barking orders from the booth, and they're sweating peasants in aprons and pieces of flair with dirty washcloths hanging out their back pocket. Waiters and waitresses have to put up with us and paste wide, toothy grins across their faces besides. They split bills, sop up spills, and slip and slide across slick kitchen floors for us. Despite this all-odds-against-them setup, there are a few gems out there, a few rare, bright gems who deliver perfect waiter or waitressness. Perfection here is defined solely as bringing free refills to the table without our even asking. Because nothing beats ice-filled towers of cola arriving unannounced at our table, just as we're finishing up our spinach and artichoke dip, a perfectly timed palate cleanse before the big entree. The only things that come close are ice-filled towers of cola arriving unannounced right after the entree, and ice-filled towers of cola arriving unannounced with the check and a handful of mints. It's a great scene. 3 hours later, when you lie bloated on the couch, your entire meal swimming in the carbonated sea that is your digestive system, I know your eyelids will droop heavily and your posture will slide, but I also know you'll give a thin, subtle smile and a slow, sure thumbs-up sign when anyone asks, "How was dinner?" Awesome.
The final seconds of untangling a really big knot. I don't know how to tie my shoes. I know, it's terrible, it's embarrassing, but I seriously can't tie my shoes the way most people do. My fingers don't slide the right way. When I try the loop around and pull through move, I end up with a limp and loose version of the final product. As a result, I'm stuck with the bunny ears method, also known as the double loop or grandma knot. Yes, I make a loop with my right hand and a loop with my left, and then I tie them together. It's a tiny bit slower, but that's not the worst of it. The worst of it is that it often results in massive, tightly wound knots that take forever to untie. So basically, I try to avoid untying my shoes altogether. Instead, I spend 1 or 2 minutes wedging and banging my foot into them each time I leave the house. Although this technique results in completely squashing the back of my shoe, I find it preferable than sorting out the granddaddy knot waiting for me down there. But sometimes there is no choice. See, at some point my scraggly knot will lie lazily on the side of my shoe, staring up at me with its sad, dusty face, and I can only smile wearily, shake my head, sit down on a step, and get ready to slog away in the 5-minute heavyweight title card of me versus the knot. I'm not going to lie. I often lose this battle, choosing instead to throw on a pair of sandals or stay home and order pizza. But there are also days where I come out on top. There are days where I stick my fingernail in there as hard as I can and pick and pick and pick until the lace finally starts to give. And then I start pulling it this way and that way until I can finally see the light at the end of the tunnel, the moment of truth, the dream becoming a reality. Those final few seconds of untangling a really big knot happen in a hazy, slow motion. A twisted lace becomes loose, and then another. And then there is some frantic untying as it all comes undone. Yes, whether it's headphone wires, Nintendo controllers, phone cables, or Christmas lights, it sure feels great during the last few seconds of untangling that tightly tied mess. Awesome.
The 5-second rule. The 5-second rule simply states that any food dropped on the floor is perfectly fine to eat as long as you pick it up in less than 5 seconds. The rule has many variations, including the 3-second rule, the 7-second rule, and the extremely handy and versatile, the however long it takes me to pick up this food rule. But whatever version you use, there's just no denying why it's great. 1. Makes you look less disgusting. Because now, when you eat that wet grape that rolled into the corner by the heating vent and collected some cat hair and a few dry toast crumbs, you're not disgusting. No, you're just a law-abiding kitchen citizen. Big difference. 2. Saves time and money. Wait. Don't pull the peanut butter and jelly out again and make a whole new sandwich. No! We'll just blow the floor spice off this one and maybe tear off the wet, soggy piece of crust that landed in the juice puddle. It's all good. 3. It's scientifically proven. Well, actually, it's scientifically proven that if a floor is covered in Salmonella or E. coli, your food will be covered in Salmonella or E. coli, even if they touch for only a split second. But, and here's the kicker, that same University of Illinois study showed no significant evidence of contamination on public flooring in general. Good save, science. So, people, I give you a friend and savior in these tough times. The 5-second rule. Know it. Love it. Live by it. Awesome.
When the thing you are going to buy is already on sale. Advertisers eat me up. Honestly, whenever I leave the grocery store, I feel like I've just been had by the lot of them. I fully confess it, too. I wheel in for toilet paper and wheel out with a fat cart loaded to the gills with supersized salsa, a dozen croissants, and 2 new brands of frozen pizza. It hits me like a hammer at the cash register, but by then it's too late. Yes, I reluctantly pay the bill as my mind flashes back to the me of 15 minutes ago, a barely recognizable guy humming down the aisle and happily accepting little sample cups of drinkable yogurt from sweet old ladies in hairnets while casually tossing econo-sized cheese bricks and vacuum-sealed meat sticks into my shopping cart. Oh, I'm a happy camper amongst the freshly misted lettuce and bubbling lobster tanks. But when I get to the front and get cash register slapped, it's a different story. If you're with me, then you know that's why it's so great when you go to the store and the thing you were going to buy is already on sale. Suddenly the tables have turned, and now you're calling the shots. Oh, what's this? You ask innocently, approaching a towering display of toilet paper on sale for half price. Half off? Really? Well, that's perfect, because that's all I came here for anyway. And you know what? May as well get 7 extra dozen while I'm here, too. Looking around the store with raised eyebrows. And I guess that's everything for today. Then you mime, making a big checkmark on your grocery list, and smile as you savor the moment sweetly. Yes, now your wallet stays fat, your smile stays fresh, and you ride the fast lane straight to penny-pinching heaven. Awesome.
Peeling that thin plastic film off new electronics. Welcome to the world, remote control. We're happy to have you with us, laptop monitor. Your free cell phone. Awesome.
Finding your keys after looking forever. Panic sets in very slowly. It's early in the morning, and you're heading out for work. After flicking your lights off and stomping your shoes on, you casually tap your pockets and find them surprisingly dentless. No big deal, you think with a mild shrug. Probably left them on the kitchen counter. So you swing by the kitchen, only to find no dice, man. No dice at all. You double-check your pants, flip through your purse, and pause for a split second to stare at the microwave clock while doing some math, figuring you need to leave in 7 minutes so you're not late for work. You suddenly ditch your jacket on the floor and go perform the classic key-hunting play in 3 acts. Act 1. The slow build. The curtain rises to a scene of you re-scanning the kitchen counter, triple-checking your pockets, and then searching the rest of the house in an increasingly frantic panic. You walk all over the carpet as your forehead starts sweating and you begin checking more and more obscure places. Violinists in the pit band work into a frenzy as thunder crashes outside the window, while you check the bathroom counter, desk drawers, and fridge, but come up empty. And it is black. Act 2. The detective. The dusty spotlight shakes and stops on a shot of you pausing by the front door. You grimace at the ceiling, sucking in deep breaths, scratching your head. A dog barks faintly in the distance, and thunder cracks again as you suddenly transform into a detective, pausing to retrace your steps from where you saw your keys last. I came home. I went upstairs. I changed into sweatpants, you recall quietly to the hushed crowd. I ate a frozen burrito. I checked my email. I fell asleep on the couch. There is a long, drawn-out pause, and it is black. Act 3. The Greatest Hits. Running out of options, your mind flashes back to your greatest hits, a quick-clicking slideshow of places you found your lost keys in the past. The audience is treated to brilliant back-screen images of happier days. Sporting a lower hairline, flatter stomach, and tighter t-shirt, a high school you happily finds the keys in your jeans pocket by the laundry hamper. Late for an end-of-the-year kegger with your boyfriend in college, you frantically trip over empty pizza boxes and video game controllers before finding them wedged tightly between couch cushions. But as you race around, it slowly and painfully dawns on you one by one by one. Those places are all empty today. Spotlights meet and then dim on your sad and hollow face as the audience suddenly realizes it's a tragedy. The curtain drops heavily and there is quiet and respectable applause from those who aren't too shocked to show their appreciation. But wait, the theater lights stay down. There is some quick whispering. A tiny sizzle of electricity fills the room.
There is an encore. The curtain lifts for a final fleeting scene of you scrambling around your house trying to form some drippy half-baked plan. You consider calling in sick for the day, getting your girlfriend to come home so you can copy her keys, or changing the locks altogether. As you race around with your jacket, a tipped-over laundry basket, and strewn couch cushions all over the floor, the music gets faster as you scale higher and higher towards complete lunacy. Nearly in tears and on the verge of madness, sweat drips down your face as you suddenly swing open the door with full force and then gasp as you immediately spot them. Hanging in the lock. The audience leaps to their feet and erupts, filling the theater with booming applause, loud whistles, and screams from the balcony. You smile at them and wink, grab the keys, kiss them, and hold them to the sky. Then you run onto the driveway, jump in your car, and zoom off into the distance. Trumpets blast from the pit band. The standing ovation continues, and big bouquets of bright red roses are tossed on stage as the great play ends with a flourish. And sure, when this happens in real life, you feel stupid, ashamed, and guilty. But more than anything else, you feel a sweet sense of relief. Your muscles droop, your chest unclenches, and a tidal wave rushes inside you and fills you up with joy. When you finally find your keys after looking forever, you hear the audience hooting and hollering as the curtain closes on this perfect little scene of awesome.
Eating the extra fries at the bottom of the bag. Hey. Eating in the car is tough. Weaving that bulky clunk of metal through highway traffic, off off-ramps, and into parallel parking spots is no small feat. And you know what makes it worse? Having a hot, crumpled bag of steamy drive-through riding shotgun. That's what. Yes, resisting the temptation is tough. But then again, unwrapping a sloppy, mustard-dripping burger over the steering wheel? Probably isn't good for anybody. So there's really only one option to satisfy your urges to both eat and live. That's right. Dip your hand in the crinkly paper well and squeeze between cool packets of ketchup, big wads of napkins, and waxy-wrapped burgers until you find that treasure trove of fries at the bottom of the bag. It's like panning for gold and is known as the pre-lunch munch in some circles. Also, we can't forget the classic afterburn move. Yes, bag fries star again, but this time they're the limp and salty chasers after your last slurp of bland watered-down cola. Yes, we both know you've got to finish that off with a flavor-saving punch, and bonus fries will do the job just fine. So dig that hand in deep and pull out a nice little bite of awesome.
The feeling of scrunching sand in your feet. Free your feet. When you kick off your tight, suffocating shoes, peel off your sweaty socks, and just start walking on the beach in bare feet, how good does that feel? Man, it's a million molecules of earth beads massaging your foot all at once. It's a tickly, grippy sand sensation. It's big piles of small cubes hugging and comforting your tired and broken soles. And yeah, sure, the sand wedges itself up into your toenails and coats the bottom of your feet like butter on toast. But whatever. Because the feeling of scrunching sand in your feet when you walk on the beach is certifiably awesome.
Scraping all the lint off an overflowing lint trap. There's something therapeutic about finger-peeling that dark gray with red flex fuzz patch off the trap, rolling it into a ball, and tossing it in the trash. Yes, after you ditch that hot, furry blanket, both you and your dryer can finally breathe again. Awesome.
The thank you wave, when you let somebody merge in front of you. Cruising with our music cranked and our cell phones ringing, we sometimes find it hard to communicate with other drivers sharing the roads. When speeds are high and time's a-ticking, we rely on silent gestures to get our points across. Now, we all know the thank you wave, when you let someone merge in front of you, is a great move. It's highway payment for arriving at your destination one car length later, whenever you let someone in. But it doesn't end there. Sure, courtesy wave etiquette may have started with the post-merge thank you wave, but the magic has spread. 1. The red light squeeze wave. You pull up to a red light, and the guy in front of you squeezes into the intersection a bit so you can make your right turn faster. As you pull up and make your move, it's time to thank that special someone for shaving 20 seconds off your commute. 2. The pre-wave. As in, I'm thanking you because the front tip of my Honda Civic is pointed into your traffic-jammed lane, and I know you see me, so just let me in. Sure, you can try to avoid eye contact, but I'm determined to pre-wave you to build up some goodwill. 3. The apology wave. Don't be fooled. Even though it looks similar to the thank you wave, the apology wave is typically accompanied by a big grimace instead of an eyebrow raise. Next time you sideswipe a van of teenagers and send them skidding off the highway into a roadside ditch, be sure to offer a heartfelt apology wave. 4. The go-ahead wave. You roll up to a four-way stop at the same time as another car and decide to let them turn first. Maybe they're a sweet old lady barely peeking over the wheel, or maybe you just want to avoid the world's slowest car accident. Either way, you give them the pleasant, open-palmed, go-ahead wave, which is sort of how the ladies on The Price is Right unveil a new washer and dryer set. Proper courtesy wave etiquette keeps two-way talking alive on our streets and prevents chaos from ruling the laneways. So when you do something generous, keep watch for a wave. And when someone helps you out, be sure to smile and wave right back. Awesome.
When you're really tired and about to fall asleep and someone throws a blanket on you. Hey, you know what's even better than taking a nap on the couch? Well, I'll tell you. That feeling you get just before you fall asleep on the couch. Yes. That's when you enter that blissful, semi-conscious, pre-nap world where your thoughts float and zoom around your brain and your muscles relax and detensify. The sun feels warm on your face, the radio in the background fades to a comforting white noise, and you know, you just know that you're about to fall asleep. It feels great. There are really only two things that can disturb you when you're in the pre-nap world. 1. Feeling like you have to go to the bathroom. Sorry, but unless you trust your bladder to balloon without bursting, you might just have to get up for this one. Nobody can really help you go to the bathroom while you're lying on the couch, unless they really, really love you. 2. Feeling cold. You get those old lying-on-the-couch shivers. You know your sheets and blankets are back on your bed and you could just get up to get them, but you don't really want to move because then you'll leave the blissful pre-nap world. And it's a nice world. It's a world you don't leave lightly. So that's why it's great whenever someone notices your dilemma and just quietly grabs a blanket from the closet and tosses it on your semi-conscious self. If they're really nice, they even flap the blanket above you and let it open up and softly land on you. When that happens, you immediately feel the warmth radiating around you. A tiny smile curls itself on the corners of your lips, and you fall deeper and deeper into a nice, relaxing rest. Awesome.